Hello and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shea Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Dennis Prout is an investment advisor representative with Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with a financial professional.
Well, this is Dennis Prout. I am a CFP, Certified Financial Planner. Thanks for listening. With us today, we have as our special guest, Jonathan Sluice, CPA from InTrust CPAs. John's primary focus is understanding tax, accounting, and financing considerations and sharing that experience with individuals and business owners. And I can say personally, he does a great job at sharing that information and communicating it. In fact, just before the show, we were asking John, all right, John, so in regards to tax, was there a specific question or subject that you found the most interesting given the questions that we sent beforehand? And Jonathan said, no, I just love it all in regards to tax. So it's great to have you on here, Jonathan.
Well, thank you for having me.
And with us today, we also have Heidi Thompson, who is a personal financial advisor at Prout and the managing director for the staff at Prout Financial Design as well.
Good morning to everybody.
Great. Great to have you here. Thanks, Heidi. So, Jonathan, the first question I want to start with is the last, and you had pinpointed exactly, and I think it's one of the better questions because we have so many business owners, smaller business owners, if you will, in the Traverse City region. If 76% of business owners are solo entrepreneurs, no employees, what are they not taking advantage of that they could in terms of taxes?
So a lot of the solo entrepreneurs or self-employed, they say, I'm only self-employed. Well, treat yourself like a business. You are a business. And so taking those business deductions is a big part of it. So you'll hear me talk about one of the biggest changes under the new tax reform was the increase in the standard deduction. So you don't get to utilize many of the deductions that you used to take. Well, that's as it relates to you as an individual. Now, you as a business can take deductions. And so the more that we can push over to the business activity, the better. And so ask yourself, what are the expenses that you needed as a business that you wouldn't have otherwise utilized, and those can be deducted. That's nothing new. It's always been there. But that's one of the biggest things that I see as a self-employed individual is to really look at what you could treat as an expense for you.
What would be some of those things that you might say many people might overlook in terms of those expenses they can take as a self-employed or as a single business owner?
One that is, well, cell phone is a good example of something where you might take a percentage or you might use. It's not all business and it's not all personal. And so you got to try to decide what's the right answer. IRS has specific rules, whether it's listed or not, and that did change here this last year for cell phones. But that's a good example of one where you could say, well, I had it as an individual, so I'm not going to deduct it. Or you could say I had it all business, or is there a part of it?
So could that translate also to their vehicle and like a home office or something like that?
Yep, vehicle use, so mileage you can take when you're driving around in your personal vehicle. Home office can be. There are specific rules for home office, and that has a lot of other connotations that come with it. So home office is something we definitely want to talk about or look through to find out. But one other one that I see that a lot of self-employed individuals don't take advantage of is retirement. So you're able to take 25% or effectively results in 20% of your net income can be saved for retirement. So if you make $20,000 as a self-employed, you can put 25% of that into special self-employed retirement accounts.
Like a SEP account.
That's exactly right, a SEP. Or there's new ones, which would be the individual 401k, if you start talking even higher dollar amounts.
Sure.
So that's one I see that when you utilize it, you can actually save a lot for retirement. So that's nice.
So it's not only are they able to get that significant deduction for having put that money in there, it's money that's being saved for their own retirement account.
Correct.
Or for their own retirement income at some point into the future.
Mm-hmm. The other another one to look at would be apportionment. Now, that's a very long, scary word that most – when I mention that, people will look at me and say, oh, I'm too small, or it's just – I'm just a small entity, or I'm a solo entrepreneur. Especially, what is apportionment? That sounds – that's the big guys. No, it's not. So all apportionment means is allocating your income to different states. And why you would want to look to do this is Michigan isn't necessarily the most tax favorable state that are out there. And so you may choose to allocate income to other states and therefore saving that the state tax as well. That's becoming more and more the common as home-based businesses. So let's say Etsy. If you're selling on Etsy, you're shipping potentially all over the U.S. So you have the potential of being able to allocate income to different states. And the trick with that is if you can allocate it to other states that you don't live in, you may not have to file in those states. And so it's tax-free from a state income tax point of view.
So if it's individual that's purchased a good or service from you from another state, then you may be able to take advantage of apportionment.
Yes, you may. Yep. And that's and there's new laws that went into effect. It's not the tax law that we're we started talking about on the topic here, but it's also equally as pivotal and earth-shattering. It's called the Wayfair legislation that came through this last year, and it relates to what states view as being taxable and which state it goes to.
But how do you spell that? Wayfair.
Wayfair. Wow, it's the home goods store. Wayfair.
They okay. have just what you need.
Okay. I should watch television more. Yeah.
And where that all gets to is many states don't have income tax. Rather, yeah. they have sales tax. And so it's a big, big argument of which state gets to claim which income.
Mm-hmm.
And so is it an Indiana income or is it a Michigan income or what state is it? And so that came down and defined some specific things inside of there.
Can any of this apply to retirees who live either in Michigan and or Florida, let's say, at different times of the year?
Absolutely, yes. That is something that we'll definitely look at. Florida, Texas, Wyoming, Arizona all have no income tax. Now, the offset of that is property taxes. So wherever your primary residence is you're going to get a homestead exemption. Mm-hmm. And so you're offsetting income tax with primary personal residence
okay.
tax.
So the offsets and or the income, you got to take a look at what those benefits might be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, the first thing that I think of is, do you have a way, computer modeling, to take a look at what's the best way for a client to structure their income mm-hmm. to satisfy, obviously, the law, but also to get the best tax benefit?
Yeah, the short answer is yes. I mean, we'll go through and look at it. And again, it's not that you are avoiding taxes in other states. You're just looking at potentially having it go into other states and deciding you may not have to file or you may be below certain thresholds. And so we look at all of those. And it's always the cost benefit of it, because if you're making $15 in a particular state, well, it doesn't make sense to file
sure.
there. But you can look at those. And getting back to what we started talking about there was many small business owners or solar entrepreneurs or Schedule C self-employed say, oh, that's all fancy things that are going to be for the big companies. No, it's not. In today's day and age with QuickBooks, it's very easy to pull that reports. Etsy has the ability, all the different online shopping, Shopify, those all have the ability mm-hmm. to do a sales by state. And it's actually a relatively easy analysis to do.
If there was such a thing, the next thing that comes to my mind is, given how busy everyone is, including business owners, and sometimes, frankly, it's just surviving, what would be the best time for them to come in to see someone like yourself, given how busy you are at tax season? If you could say, here are the general times that we're most able to see somebody and or talk to somebody about their situation.
April 14. No, I'm kidding. No, actually, we tell individuals either right now is a great time to come in now into June to start thinking about things that we're going to do yet this year. We really like talking to individuals in, say, August, September, October period for doing year-end planning. It's a little bit late to do fundamental changes then, but you can get those last-minute year-end things in. So definitely during the year versus at the end of the year. So
spring and summer.
Yes, we've flipped over already. We filed a lot of our taxes already, and we've flipped into doing tax planning for many of our clients. Thinking about what we're going to be doing this next year.
It sounds to me like appropriate planning. You can save, in some cases, clients, people, business owners, significant amounts of money by looking at this perhaps from a different standpoint or a different light, given where their income is coming from and taking advantage of very legal expenses that they might not have taken advantage otherwise.
Correct.
Right. Let's take a break, shall we? And we'll go into the next section. But first, your phone number, if you would, Jonathan, just say that over there.
231-935-1590.
Great. 231-935-1590. Thanks, Jonathan. We'll be back right after the break. Great. It's great to be back and to have Jonathan Sluice with us, CPA in Traverse City, Michigan. Phone number for your office, again, if you would, Jonathan, is?
231-935-1590.
So we're talking about tax today. I know everyone is on the edge of your seats. I know. I understand. I really do. But it's a necessary evil in some respects, and the details can be overwhelming. And frankly, some of you may be a little bit steaming still about the complexity of tax. That's why we want to discuss it. We want to try to obviously help you, and Jonathan has helped us and some of our clients too with great tax advice. So we wanted to have him on talking about taxes and how you might be helped in that regard too. So the next question we have is, what are the most expensive tax traps? What are the most expensive tax traps that you've seen?
Well, there's lots of them. The IRS likes to put in lots of simple code that they have, that, you know, simple laws that they have, so we don't have to worry about any of these tax traps that are out there.
That's why it's so easy to understand.
Yes. No. A couple of these here that I have actually aren't related to the new tax law. They're old ones that are there, but I feel like it's important to actually mention them. I will get right to the ones that are from the new law. But the first one is... it's very common, or it's become more common to use 529 plans for saving for college. A mistake that I see oftentimes, though, with those 529 plans is you've been saving and using that for 5-10 years. You did a lot of work to make that effort and save it, and your son or daughter goes to college first year. You didn't save long enough, so you only have enough for the first year, let's say. Well, you pull it all in the first year. You use your 529 plan. You pay for college the first year. You have a little bit left over for next year, but you're feeling pretty good. Well, the unfortunate thing is the IRS says you can't double dip with a 529 plan or the education credits. Well, the education credits are very good tax credits that are there. So if you use dollars from your 529 plan, you can't use those same dollars for that tax credit. And so under that example that I just gave there, if you were to use and pay all of your tuition with your 529 plan, you can't use those same dollars for that tax credit. And so what you want to do is you want to split that 529 usage over the whole period, or at least plan for it. There are other things we can do if you do accidentally make that mistake. There are some strategies that we can do, and we can adjust and take it in. You can take it as income, or you can do other things, but it negates what you spent all this time doing with a 529 plan. And so with a little bit of planning, a little bit of thought ahead of time, you can structure that so it takes it, it makes it last longer.
Okay, let's just use an example. Mm-hmm. Let's say the cost for the year for a child, let's say it's in-state, I don't know, let's say it's $15,000. About how much would be available to an average couple? Let's say their income is in Traverse City, let's say it's $75,000. Would you be able to say right offhand about what their tax credit would be, or would that be something that'd have to be figured based on their overall tax situation?
Off of the $75,000, I can. It's okay. Based on what you actually spend for this. It's the largest one is called the American Opportunity Tax Credit. There are others, okay. But the one that's most commonly referred to now is the American Opportunity Tax Credit. That is where you max it is $4,000 of qualified expenses, which is pretty easy to get in today's day and age for the college costs.
Sure.
You would end up with $2,500 as a credit. Well, the key there is you have to have at least $4,000 of qualified expenses.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure that you save $4,000 that you can use, whether it comes from a loan or for other sources. You want to make sure that you're incurring those costs not through a 529 plan.
So in this case, the parent or the child, Actually, be the parent if they're the ones filing. Obviously, they're filing their own taxes. Have to expend that $4,000 for the child's education themselves, mm-hmm. along with using the 529 plan for other expenses related to higher education.
Yes,
that's
and
what you're saying.
You hit an interesting fact there, and that's where we would jump in if we came in later and we said oops, or yeah. you said oops. The 529 plan can be used for additional expenses that yes. those credits don't. For room and board or for
tuition,
other,
books, fees, expenses.
Yeah. So there are some things that we can do, but most often individuals don't have their full 4 years of college saved for in their 529
right.
plan.
Right.
Yeah. And so it just takes a little bit ahead of time to really think through, okay, let's spread this out a little bit. I do see that quite a bit.
So, right. John, are you saying, because graduation is coming up really soon for mm-hmm. a lot of high schoolers, so as the parents are looking towards the fall when their kids go off, it might be a good idea to go in now and talk to their CPA to help them plan for how they're going to make these payments in the future, right? So
correct. Yeah. And interesting enough, actually, we talk about a lot of tax planning for businesses. Tax planning for retirement or tax planning for FAFSA or financial aid actually also has consideration of when you take income or when the child takes income or your son or daughter does or whether you do. Deferring some of that income that you may get from, say, a big bonus or something that may impact your FAFSA, which has a dollar-for-dollar adjustment potentially on financial aid. So that is something to think about.
So a credit against tax is worth a significant amount more than a deduction.
Yes,
correct. In today's tax world, about four times the amount at a 25% mm-hmm. tax bracket.
Mm-hmm.
So significant compared to a deduction itself. It just means that that's the pinnacle in terms of tax saving measures, is to be able to take a credit against your tax mm-hmm. itself. Mm-hmm. Very valuable. So that's a great example, again, Heidi, yeah. of actually someone heading into school, yeah. a college with their student, sitting with a CPA and saying, all right, how do I do this? And what would make the most sense for us given our situation?
Right, because it seems complicated enough with, you think of the FAFSA and you think about the credits for the college expense. I mean, it's worth a discussion
Absolutely.
With your CPA to figure yeah. that out. It might yeah. save you in the long run.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. $2,500 in taxes is obviously a pretty significant amount. It's great.
The next tax trap I would kind of talk about, and yeah. again, this is one that's been around for a long time, but I cringe as a CPA every time I see this, and it happens all too often, is when individuals pull early from their retirement accounts. There are so many things that can be done and many adjustments or thinking through to avoid that, because you not only take it as income, you're paying penalties. Think and plan ahead of time on that and look through it. I mean, that's
there really almost is no more expensive money, because it's going to cost an average, if a taxpayer is in a 25% federal bracket, the cost of not only the bracket plus the penalty is about 35% to 40% when you add the state of Michigan in. Mm-hmm. So you've just lopped off, if you will, let's say conservatively, 30% to 40% of the dollar amount by having paid taxes as well as the penalty to draw that money out. So there may well be cheaper money, much cheaper money to draw
yes.
for that emergency or whatever it is. And you see that all too often, eh?
All too often. And you mentioned just the standard rates,
yeah.
let alone pushing you into impacts of the premium tax credit, which is the health insurance, and having to pay that back, or the FAFSA, or other things. So what the 40% is just the tax implications, let alone the other implications. And generally, when it's happening, it's just a ripple effect where I have seen it as much as 100% goes back, that you drew it out, and then you're just paying it all back come tax time. So I'd cringe whenever I see those and just talk through those ahead of time.
Right. So a lot of times when we have brand new clients come in, those people who are maybe just starting with a new employer and they're in their employer's plan, one of the things that we make sure we talk about with our clients is this is not a savings account. The retirement accounts, the IRAs, it's not really a savings account, because there is that penalty before you're 59 and a half mm-hmm. That you have to pay if you access that money. So it's always a good idea to have both types of savings, your regular savings plus your retirement savings.
That brings on to actually some very common tax planning strategy that we're having right now. most individuals, the feeling that I'm getting, and myself included, is that we are in a fairly low tax regime right now.
Yeah.
And so taking advantage
almost
of these—
almost historically low.
Historically low. And so taking advantage of some of those lower rates to look at our after-tax savings accounts, so not retirement accounts, after-tax savings or Roth or other things, and so that you're diversified within the different savings that you have. Yeah.
So diversified not only to investment, but also tax consequence. Yes. When they're drawing that money out, whether it's a Roth IRA, a Roth 401k. We—
correct.
See a lot of clients, frankly, overlooking the possibility of using the Roth 401k or the Roth option within their 401k.
And you
can't deduct it now, it comes out tax-free at retirement.
And I'm going to take that one step further and say even more than just retirement accounts, and I know I'm sitting right next to two financial advisors who I might have to step back from here after this.
But
looking at savings can come in different options, not just investment accounts. I always joke that John Deere Green and Case Yellow can make great long-term savings accounts or retirement accounts. So thinking truly diversified, and there you get the tax deferred benefit of it and others. And so going back and circling back to as a small business owner, it's more than just the cash in an investment account that you need to look at too.
Okay, you lost me at the John Deere Green and the Case Yellow. So you're saying having a variety of tractors on a gentleman's farm might be akin to having a variety of options in your retirement accounts?
Exactly. John Deere, I don't want to call out any John Deere versus Holland or New Holland or otherwise
sure.
here, but
I get that.
The point being is that there are more than just liquid assets that you can look at what items that hold value, and so treating that. And so if I look at my excavators or my farmers, they're turning those assets and making them into retirement. You know, they're using those dollars, those assets to make better investments that will in turn have residual value down the road.
That makes great sense, Jonathan. That's huge, and I think you made a great point there. So I want to emphasize a little bit. So, given someone's specific talents or skills, taking advantage of those and using those to allow them to have an appreciating asset for a period of years until they can draw income in the future, they may be overlooking some of those assets, mm-hmm. given what they have in their very own backyard, mm-hmm. and or in their own head, if you will, in terms of knowledge, skills that they can take advantage of.
Yeah, we oftentimes when we look at what is our wealth or what is our retirement account or my savings account, we only look at what's in our savings account or in my 401k. But as a small business owner or as a business owner, there are many other assets you have that we mm-hmm. should be looking at overall of what's there.
Great point. So. In terms of retirement planning and investment planning, too.
Correct. Yep.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. So we were talking about something at the break, and you were kind of expanding on the equipment tax deduction that a client could get, as well as what that might mean for their retirement. So what specifically were you referencing when you were talking about this significant tax deduction as well as a working piece of equipment too?
Mm-hmm. Well, when I talk to a lot of my business owners, we do talk about retirement in savings and what they have in their overall portfolio or their net worth and others. And oftentimes business owners forget that they have their equipment. And to me, equipment is equally as important of a discussion to have and think of it as a savings account. So if you're talking to a financial advisor, they're going to say you buy a bond. You buy your principal bond is $25,000. It's going to give you a residual income over the lifetime of that bond, and then you're going to turn around and sell it. Well, there are certain equipment that you can have that you buy as a business owner, you utilize, so you put your dollars into it, you use that to generate income that's going to come every single year, and at the end of that period, there is some equipment that has just as much residual value as when you bought it than when you sold it, or slightly less. So, but there is a value there, and so not only do you get the deduction when you buy that equipment up front, you get to use it during the period of, the life of that asset, but then you also have a residual value at the end. And that residual value can amount to a very significant amount for several individuals, for many individuals.
So given that they are now at retirement, whether someone else is buying that outright, they're selling it at some sort of auction, or the business that's taking over is buying that equipment from them, obviously they're getting an income mm-hmm. of some type then at retirement
mm-hmm.
that would help them offset their other expenses
mm-hmm.
related to life expenses for retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic idea. And again, a great way to look at, if you will, at the bigger picture. What are all the assets? What are my income sources? And what are possible assets I'm thinking or not thinking of in relation as a really, whether or not it's an appreciating asset, it's an asset that I can turn into an income.
Correct.
At retirement.
Yep.
And that is the big piece, isn't it? Really, the income at retirement too.
Mm-hmm.
Huge part of it. Heidi, you had a question, I think, as well.
Well, I was curious. Something that we've been working with our clients on in a tax strategy is the QCD, which is the Qualified Charitable Distribution, which is something that is connected to that RMD, which is your required minimum distribution for people who have retirement fund assets that are over 70 and a half. They're required to take a certain amount. I just wondered, are you seeing more of that or what does it look like?
We did see a significant increase in the QCDs, the Qualified Charitable Distributions. I think that's largely a function of the fact that the increase of the standard deduction. So over this last year under the new tax law, individuals, married individuals got $24,000, and if you retired at that case, $26,600, that they got to use for free, if you will. So they could go through and itemize their deductions. So they can itemize the interest, they can itemize their donations and itemize their property taxes, or they could take the standard deduction, whichever is greater. Well, if you utilize the QCD or the Qualified Charitable Distribution, then you still could take that larger standard deduction. So we did see a big pickup of those and a pickup of awareness of it. So we saw some early adopters coming through, but we are seeing more and more of them that are being utilized. I do want to take this opportunity to make sure I mention that there is something very important with those, though, that timing is everything on that, because that QCD has to come from your RMD, so your required minimum distribution. Mm-hmm. So let's go through the example where your RMD might be $4,000. Well, if you're pulling out $10,000 for the year, and then you come tax season in December, you're thinking ahead, okay, I'm going to use this QCD, and you've pulled out your $4,000, which was the RMD there, and now you're after that, and you say, I'm going to use these dollars, it doesn't qualify because it has to come from that RMD.
So the required minimum distribution in this example, again, is $4,000. A client would have to pull out the first $4,000 and give whatever portion of that to the charity of their choice to not have that included as income for the year. They cannot take it out of the balance that they decided to take from the IRA above the RMD and still use that as non-qualified income for that charity, for giving to that charity.
That's exactly correct. And to answer your question of are you seeing it more, I think we'll really have a telltale will be in a couple years when the charitable organizations realize they should be sending their donor request letters in January and February versus in November and December. So when you see that fundamental shift, you'll know it's working.
So a heads up to the charities in town. You want to send your letters to clients who can participate with that QCD now.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are in...
We're in May.
May. Yes, May. Hello, hello.
And another thing just to make sure people know is that money needs to go from the IRA to the charitable institution and not go into their own checking account. Yeah. And then they write the check because that doesn't qualify.
Yeah.
Your IRA will write the check and you'll get all the appropriate reporting, but you need to make certain that you tell your accountant or CPA, this is the amount I gave to the charity. And this 1099 is not necessarily going to reflect that. So you need to tell them that this is what actually happened with those dollars, that it went to your charity. Okay.
Right. And in fact, at Prout Financial Design, we actually send a letter to our clients in like November, December each year saying, don't forget to tell your accountant that you took a QCD this year.
Yeah, because we send them a special letter in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So that they know.
I also see an increase in discussions on charitable trusts and charitable donor-advised funds.
Mm-hmm.
So some individuals say, well, I don't want my retirement account to be the one that gives the donation. I want to have control of – or I want to be the one that's writing those checks, and I want to give the donation for $50 and $100.
Sure.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Dennis and Heidi, you don't want to be writing $50 and $100 checks would be my guess. And so there are other options available, and that's those donor-advised prize funds, and they do have a place as well. And where you can utilize those is when you do lapping or bunching the standard deductions. So.
And bunching simply means that you give in a lump sum into that donor advised fund to get the full deduction that year because of the amount that you gave into that, whether it was stock or other appreciated property, and getting that full deduction for it, more advanced tax conversation, but a great way to take advantage of the deduction, even though the standard deduction is now $24,000 for a couple, you may be able to overcome that with that charitable gift given direct to your own foundation or donor advised fund. Mm-hmm. All right, Jonathan, so you were discussing during the break some Northern Michigan tax traps that clients should be aware of.
Yep, and that has to do with renting out your house or your cottage. So I'll call it the Airbnb law or other things. I mean, and I won't even get into the whole topic of whether it's right, wrong, or otherwise. And I'm just going to talk about, okay, let's say we have it. Perhaps the largest tax benefit that an individual has is the sale of their primary residence. So you, as a single individual, you can sell your house for $200,000. As long as you've lived there for more than two of the last 5 years, you can sell your primary residence. The gain can be $250,000 before you pay any taxes on it. And as a married couple, it could be up to $500,000.
So $250,000 or $500,000 gain, no tax.
Correct. That's assuming it's your primary residence. Well, what happens if you've rented it out? Now, this is very clear when it's another when it's a standalone rental. So you have a cottage rental, that's the whole purpose is the rental. And I think people feel pretty comfortable with that. But now as we're renting a room, well, how do I treat that? Is that my primary residence? Is it not? And so that does cause a lot of complications that come into it. And so there are a lot of tax benefits and loopholes that we can find with those Airbnb laws as well. So allocating costs, bringing that back again to thinking of businesses and what are some of those expenses. So allocating the cost of those linens, allocating the cost of those things. We can do those when we have that income from the Airbnb or otherwise. But there are pitfalls that come along with that, and that is related to the fact that you might lose some of your primary residence deduction or exemption.
Well, how would that work? So let's say I'm renting out my home perhaps for, I don't know, 8, 10 weeks in the summer perhaps. Could I endanger the house of that tax exemption from the gain if I were to sell it at some point in the future? What would be the danger area?
More than 14 days. So there is a law that's out there. If you're less than 14 days, then you're exempt from any of those rules. More than 14 days, you have to consider it. The IRS is still trying to figure out how to handle these partial rentals. There are specific codes that deal with certain aspects of it. But it is just like it is new here in Northern Michigan on the zoning and all that. It's new for the IRS as well, and so they're trying to figure out.
So the IRS hasn't come down on this yet, but they're looking at it more closely.
They are looking more closely. They are. There are specific requirements of what they want you to do and how they want you to do it, but there are parts of it that there could be loopholes that come in there.
All right. So it's important for people to know that if I'm renting out my house, I may be subjecting the gain in the future to some greater gain, taxability than it would otherwise. Yep. But they'll need to be in touch with their CPA or other tax advisor in regards to those rules and regulations. Is that accurate enough to say?
It is. And that's an income tax. And perhaps even the bigger pitfall off of it is sales tax. So there's the potential that you are, when you're renting out, you are providing a service, and that service is taxable by the state of Michigan. So depending on the service that you've elected to utilize, they may remit and collect for you, or you may be obligated to do that. So
treat your rental of your personal residence like you would any other business, and consult with your tax person about that.
That is correct.
Any of the pitfalls. Great. Thanks. Another question that we were talking about were some of the biggest loopholes that people can take advantage of. And we talked about the QCDs. Were there any, and also the equipment, were there any other loopholes that people should be aware of that they might be able to take advantage of, Jonathan?
I alluded to a little bit earlier, but I do feel that we're in a fairly low tax regime overall. so low that there is the potential that there could be significant capital gains that you have that end up being taxed at a 0% tax rate. So there's, we ran into that more often than I was expecting to during this last past year.
Really?
Because they increased the thresholds for those capital gains. And so here we got done talking about how you want to defer all this gain. You got to think about these.
Sure.
This comes back into the thing. Sometimes recognizing income isn't a bad thing, because if I can recognize income at a 0% rate, I love that opportunity.
That's a pretty good rate.
And so,
I'll take it.
And that gets into whether or not you're going to take some of the dollars. You know, you may choose to defer some of the gain. So you might say you sell a piece of equipment and part of its capital gain, or you sell a house, or you sell a stock, or any of those.
Or a mutual fund.
Depending on where your income falls, all of it or some of it may be at 0% gain. So, and it's higher than you think it is. So.
All right, so that's certainly a conversation, again, given that they've got capital gains. They're trying to perhaps convert some of that money into income, income generating asset. They may be best off at taking the capital gain on that particular growth mutual fund, as for instance, and turning it into an income mutual fund or whatever it might be, and not so much worrying about the fact that it has a capital gain, because they may be paying nothing for that gain.
Correct.
And or converting that or paying that gain over a couple, 3 years to take maximum advantage of that 0% capital gain.
Yeah, watching that 0% is something that's very important. We do watch that pretty close. So.
Same thing would be true of taking a look at tax brackets.
Yes.
Now, Shay's over here. She's really mad because she's not taking advantage of much of these capital gains as she ought to be. See that?
I'm furious.
Yes, she's furious. Wow. So those are some great points, Jonathan. And then we also have one other question we want to ask. What do you like to see from a financial advisor when it comes to not only documents but reporting? What do you like to see in those terms? What's helpful to you as a tax advisor to a client to see from a financial advisor?
I think we've alluded to a little bit, but the willingness to look outside of just a stereotypical investment accounts and recognize that there is much more to a retirement account. I see more and more individuals that have dollars in two or three 401k plans, an IRA, a simple orphaned account over there, and then I've got my business and otherwise. And really looking at it a holistic picture, I think that's pretty important. Open communication is key. We talk a lot with the financial advisors that we work with. Prior to the year, just going over like that 0% capital gain is a good example of that, and strategizing and utilizing the time ahead of before the year end, because you can't go back and sell a stock in December when it's now April. So you have to do that beforehand. So having the willingness to work before year end.
The calendar year is the time to take those kind of gains or losses, for that fact, to offset the gains.
Correct. Taking the opportunity to look back at interest-free earnings where that might have made sense in the past. They may not make sense now because of the tax brackets are lower right now.
And so municipal bond interest may not be as valuable.
Correct. Yep, and looking at the premium. Now, I'm not saying not holistically saying get out of that, but I'm saying you have to reevaluate. You know, so the tax law came out. Now it's changed. The rates are lower. Is the premium that we're paying for that tax-free worth it anymore?
Given the tax-free income that's coming from that bond itself.
Correct.
All right.
So it may not be worth getting that lower return because you have space in your income bracket for that income.
Correct.
Yep. Okay.
So the QBID, which is perhaps the biggest... Qualified business income deduction. QBID or qualified business income deduction. It's a 20% business deduction that businesses get for being profitable and having wages. That's the very short answer, and there are volumes now that I've written about that. So if I can asterisk anything that we've talked about today, that's that sentence right there.
A huge wrinkle in the tax law for individual business owners.
Yeah, so for business owners and for businesses, very, very great thing. Mm-hmm. Now, in regards to the question of how can the tax advisors or the financial advisors, you as an owner of businesses, let's say in your investment accounts, you get part of that income coming in. And so it was a new code that came on 1099s this year at the year end that said, okay, there's dividends now that you got that were a result of this new deduction. And that new deduction actually impacted a lot of individuals. And so stepping back and realizing that you may not own any business that you own yourself, but if you have any savings or any investments that are invested in businesses, you have the chance of getting some of that. And so to watch for that and to think through. So
the qualified business deduction may be available to those who not only own their own business, but also participate in other businesses. And they may be not availing themselves or have discounted that, not thinking that they can take advantage of that. Again, they'll want to contact their business consultant or, frankly, you to get more information about that particular deduction, which was a huge increase in the new tax law.
Yeah.
A huge increase in deductions and deductibility for business owners.
Yep. And I think lastly, I would say for the communication is we saw a significant crunch in time to prepare tax returns here at the end of the year. Again, why we push so much to say let's talk ahead of time. Because investment accounts and W-2 income, the information is coming. It's not coming in until end of February, March, and the returns are still due. They delayed the information coming, but they didn't delay when it was due. And so early discussions on what may be draft, but we can update it later, is pretty important as well.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much for listening. Certainly appreciate it.
And thanks, John, for joining us today.
You bet.
Thank you for having me here.
You're welcome.
All right, I'm going to read Heidi's disclosure now. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, an independently owned registered investment advisor. Speaking of Heidi Thompson, next week I will be interviewing Heidi for the Mother's Day show. So tune in. We look forward to seeing you then. Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.